When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. No.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Chopper Pete Quinnell and I am joined by Luke Owen, not Randy Andy Datsun today. We're bringing in the big boys. We've got Luke today. Hey, Luke.
Hello, Swap Nation, and a hello to you, Pete Quinnell. How the devil are you?
I'm all right, mate. I'm really tired, but I'm good.
Yeah, Luke, you're a hungover boy today.
No, definitely not. Yeah, kind of am. Yeah. I met up with friends yesterday. We didn't go out. We went to someone's house, which, you know, is better. Because we realized that it might be the last time we see each other for a little while, which was kind of sad. But it was nice. It was a really fun night. So, had really good fun. And, in fact, a little tease for the outro. We played a game. It was really good.
Ooh.
So, that's a little tease for the outro. But let's get into talking about SmackDown, where we're going to be talking about how Goldberg and Roman Reigns is not working. Here's the show. This show, as a whole, felt like the first proper show that they've put on. Last week's SmackDown was very much it's Triple H having bants with Michael Cole, and we're gonna tell him to get hype and stuff. Whereas this one felt like a proper empty arena show, an actual regular episode of SmackDown, but in front of no fans. They still referenced the crowd once or twice, but even with the no fans, there was a great comment that Luke made to me before we just went live, was that even with no fans, Goldberg versus Roman Reigns still has no heat. How is that even possible?
I don't know, dude. But like, yeah, it's because the reason why is I felt like it had no heat, you know, even with no fans there, because Otis, when he freaked out during the tag match with Miz and Morrison, that felt like it had heat. Like when he was going off against Dolph and like he was wailing on Miz and Morrison with chairs, that felt like it had heat. When Sasha smiled at Bayley, like when she realized she got into the women's championship match and she had that little smile on across her face, and then Bayley walked across, ooh, sad, and Banks just had this little, you know, she smiled. I was like, okay, that feels like it's got heat. Brian and Zane feels like it has heat. But I know there's no reactions to Goldberg and Reigns coming out because there's no fans there, but it felt so flat. Like, it just felt like these were two lads just went out there and just went, blah, 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 big dog, yada, 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 legend, doody, doody, do, Undertaker, Lesnar, I've beaten them all, doomba, dooba, doo, I'm going to beat you. And it just felt like it was like nothing. And it's just a feud that has zero heat.
Yeah, it does not make sense. These two feel like they have zero chemistry together. And because the segment itself was a contract signing between Reigns and Goldberg for the Universal Championship match at WrestleMania that is too big for one night, which they were sure to tell you 17 different times in the show. It came out with Michael Cole standing in the ring saying, the WWE Universe never saw this match coming in a million years. Sure,
no. Cole. Yeah,
whatever you say, Cole. Buddy. but then, yeah, he brings out Roman Reigns and Goldberg to, you know, obviously zero reaction, there's no fans. But like you said, it just felt really flat. There's something weird about it. Goldberg says that he hoped that Reigns answered his challenge, but didn't know he had the balls. Ooh,
yeah.
That's a low shot from Goldberg. But then,
and that's it, man.
It just felt so weird because then afterwards, Reigns, they show a tweet from Reigns in January because he uses the little piece of fabric on the floor when he does his punch on the stage, and he said, "Oh, headbutting doors would be stupid." Why is Goldberg headbutting a door the crux of this feud? I don't get it. Because then Goldberg was saying, I've been destroying steel doors across the world with that headbutt. What?
And that's it. And I think as well, funnily enough, that whole thing about the pad, I'm pretty sure that was started by Sam at Cultaholic. Because someone tweeted him asking what the pad is, because there were, and then it became this thing where like people were saying, no, it's to set off the pyro. That's what it's there for. And Sam was like, no, it's just like a little protective pad.
It's
not punching the floor.
Yeah.
And then Roman eventually, you know, tweeted out, no, it's a protective pad because I don't want to be punching the floor every single night.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy how Sam from Cultaholic is a crux of this feud.
Absolutely, yeah. So we've got Sam to blame for this entire feud. Good. Everyone go tweet Sam Driver.
Yeah, we're all aware.
Less defined on Twitter. Go tweet him.
Sam is at fault here. yeah, and then it's just like, as you say, Reigns signs the contract. Goldberg says something about lockers. He signs the contract, flips the table over, and they go nose to nose. And that was it. It was actually quite, even with a crowd, this would have felt pretty boring.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
It was made worse by the fact that there wasn't a crowd there. Now, that's not their fault. Like, the fact that there's no crowd there is not their fault, you know. But I don't think they're being given good material to work with either.
No, exactly.
So, and it really does stem from the fact that, A, this is a match that I don't think people particularly want to see because no one really wanted Goldberg to be the champion. But B, and I think more importantly, there's no story going into this because Goldberg just came out and said, who's next? And Roman went, me. And that's how we've got this match. Like, there was no fire to go into it. There's just, they're trying to start a fire, but they have no kindling. They have no wood. They have no matches. They don't even have dry ground. Like, they have got nothing that they need to start a fire here.
They've literally got some water and just gone, how do we light this?
The only thing, yeah, because this it is wet, so you're right. The only thing this feud has is water.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, it's like you said, the crux of this feud, I think what they're building this feud off is the assumption that everyone wants to see this match and the assumption that everyone's going to go, whoa, Roman Reigns, Goldberg, what a moment, these two together. And it's just, no one cares. No one cares about it.
Yeah.
It's quite bad, honestly, to watch them come out and just be like, oh, what? Roman Reigns answering Goldberg, what a moment that was. Like,
yeah, totally.
It wasn't a moment. No one wanted to see Roman Reigns come out. Everyone was booing Goldberg before. And now we've got a Universal Championship match between the two, Spear versus Spear, which no one wanted to see. And the thing is, I think this match would have been fine if it wasn't for the title.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Because Goldberg beat The Fiend, everyone kind of went, And then now you've thrown in Roman Reigns and everyone has gone, even more.
Yeah.
But I think if The Fiend had beaten Goldberg, kept the title, that was against Cena at WrestleMania for the title, and then you had Goldberg comes out on the next SmackDown being like, I'm angry, The Fiend beat me, grrr, and then Roman Reigns came out and said, you know, what are you crying about? You come here as a part-timer, you get a Universal Championship match straight away, and you don't win. That's your fault.
Absolutely.
Why you like that? That is something that could legitimately hook people in rather than just going, I'm next. Because that does nothing. That does nothing for any feud. It's not working. It's not connecting on any front.
No, I agree. And it's a shame as well that we've had to start off with on such a negative note, because as you kind of said at the start of the show, I do think this is I think this is the best empty arena show that WWE have done thus far, like in the sort of like this week span. I feel like they've figured it out now. I feel like this was just, I mean, there was only two matches, but they've announced three matches for next week. And it really does feel like they've worked it out. And granted, a lot of the show was taken up by the replay of Cena versus Wyatt from Mania 30. But yeah, it did feel like an actual show, which was, and I wonder if that has stemmed from the fact that we now are getting Mania across two nights. So they've got to start building more matches to fill up both of those nights.
Yeah, it is too big for one night. So yeah, and I agree. I think this is the best empty arena show they've done. And it had a lot more wrestling than on Raw, which was, you know, the 4 minutes of wrestling. Mm-hmm. We had a lot more than that. We had some good matches. We had some stuff that I was emotionally invested in. It was just that this segment in particular was just a bad segment. It wasn't indicative of empty arena show as being bad. It was just, this is a bad feud and a bad segment, which is a shame because it might main event the show.
It'll certainly main event one night. And if I was honest, if I was a betting man, it would have main evented WrestleMania. Like, if WrestleMania hadn't had to be split across two nights with no fans, it 100% would have been the main event.
Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't see it not main eventing, even above McIntyre and Lesnar, because that feels like not as much of a big deal in WWE's eyes. Which is a shame because it is a much bigger deal than Goldberg and Reigns. It's just them going like, it's Goldberg, it's Roman Reigns, it's our two favorite people. And everyone goes,
It's the marquee match.
Good. Yeah.
It's absolutely the marquee match. It's got more marquee value than Cena Wyatt. It's got more marquee value than Wyatt Roman. It's just, you know, it's their current top guy versus the top guy from 20 years ago. And they're going to collide into the ring over the biggest title on SmackDown. Like, I totally get why WWE have done it. Yeah. I just feel like there was a much better way to get there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think there's a very interesting thing from Matt Hardy's episode on Talk is Jericho, when he and Jericho are talking about how they wanted to elevate younger talent, and Hardy was pitching this idea of the broken block, which was he'd take underutilized guys and do a promo with them and try and get them over in that way. And Jericho was saying how he pitched a quite similar idea. He pitched Jericho's Junction, which would eventually become the highlight reel, where he'd take younger guys out, do interviews, do promos with them, try and get them over with their charisma in the ring and things like that. And Jericho was saying, oh, I really want to take some underutilized guys. And Vince goes, oh, yeah, I love it. Your first guest is going to be Goldberg. It's so Vince to just be like, oh, yeah, this is an opportunity to get over the people we want to push. And I feel like that is indicative of this feud. It's just like, well, I love this guy, which means everyone loves this guy. It's Goldberg. And it just doesn't connect with anyone because no one really cares like Vince does. It's just him really liking Goldberg.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
But now we have to say thank you to some very special people, and those are our $25 and above pledge hammers on Patreon. If you haven't visited WrestleTalk's Patreon yet, why not? It's great. You get loads of bonus content. There's access to all the Patreon podcasts. We're going to be releasing one every Monday now, I believe, the WrestleTalk Extra podcast. But you have access to the whole feed if you become a Patreon pledge hammer, which is great.
There's nearly 40 shows, I think, that you can get hold of. And it is like a lot of like ranging this stuff from 97, this stuff from 2000, this stuff from 2014, this stuff from like the middle. We've covered shows from New Japan, TNA, ECW, WCW. There's a really wide range of pay-per-views to dive into that me and Ollie have been doing for the last, you know, 3 and a bit years.
Yeah, and one of them has me on it. That's weird.
Yeah, you did ECW One Night Stand, the second one, which you did not enjoy.
No, really don't like hardcore wrestling where people just beat each other up and bleed for no reason. Anyway, yes, there's lots of cool extra content in these times for you to listen to if you're interested. And if you pledge at the $25 and above tier, you get a cool custom wrestling name, and it gets read out on a show like this. So, thank you to Butter Me Up, Soren Nord. Woo! And you get a cheap pop as well. Well done.
How do you like them apples, Marcel Jura?
Oh, it's still one of my favorites. I love it. Dennis the D, John Mustard.
Nice. Now, this is my favorite one. Big Trouble in Tyson Little China.
Hey!
Genius.
Thank you. Forsaken Angel, Corey Cobain. Thank you very much. Stuff.
Corin McLeaner than Finn Balor. He's lame.
Thank you very much. The Great Wall of Geordie Westside. Lovely. Nice. Stuff. Thank you.
The Machine Gun, Gregory Anderson.
Woo! Yes, thank you. The Hitchhiker, Micah Daniel. Yeah, thank you.
And lastly, Send Me to Heaven, Evan Reich.
Hey, thank you very much, everyone.
Should we review the show as a whole?
Let's do it. Yes.
Although I will say, I know we just said we don't want to start off on too much of a negative note. I did not like this opening segment.
Nor did I. Because it's the Gronk.
I want to make this very clear because I know there are people who think that I'm an anti-WWE guy, apart from someone in yesterday's video who thinks I'm nothing but a WWE mark, so I just can't win.
Of course.
But yeah. I thought this show was fine, but this opening segment sucked a big bag of dicks. I did not like this segment at all.
No, it was, like you said, a whole big bag of dicks. It started off with Michael Cole saying that WrestleMania's too big for one night, which is it was literally a tagline that came up on the screen when he was doing it. Too big for one night, WrestleMania. It's like Ultimate Thrill Ride, show of shows, too big for one night. It's one of their taglines now.
I like it as a tagline, man. I like his tagline. It's too big for one night. It's good. I like it.
Also, too big for one night. Tightly sex tape. it came out and they announced that The Gronk is going to be the host of WrestleMania. And he announced on his Twitter that WrestleMania is too big for one night. And then there was a huge video package for Gronk and his achievements in NFL and as a Fox Sports analyst. And then he came out. Mojo Rawley was there because he's his buddy, I guess. And he said he was going to introduce Gronk for the first time ever. It's the Gronk. What do you mean the first time ever? He's been at WrestleMania 33. What are you talking about, Mojo?
Yeah, and Mojo is just back as his hype character now. Sorry. Like, they've just dropped all that pretenses. I guess he's also a SmackDown guy now, brand split LOL.
Yeah.
So I don't watch American football.
No, meaning that.
I don't know who or what a Gronk is, but he's a knob. Like, he just came out and was just, like, he came out and he danced like an absolute tool. And he gets in the ring, and him and Mojo acted like complete tools. They are so unlikable. They made me cheer Baron Corbin. Like, they made me like Baron. They made me not like Elias because they're associated with him. Yeah. They are the unknown. Maybe it's just because I'm, you know, in my mid-30s now, but they are an unwatchable pair of douchebags. I do not like them.
Not at all. Yeah, and as part of the video package for Gronk, they were like, oh, he's a fun party boy kind of thing. He loves to have fun, etc. And show him, you know, drinking loads of beer and stuff because he's a lad. Yeah, I just don't think that's right for someone who's going to, you know, go on to host WrestleMania. If that's like a wrestling gimmick as an unlikable douchebag, cool. Not like your most popular guy that you want to bring in as a WrestleMania guest host. I don't. Like you said, I don't get it. They were very unlikable.
Yeah, they are presenting him as like he is the ultimate babyface. You know, hey, cheer this guy. And I, you know, maybe I'm out of touch here. Maybe I'm Seymour Skinner being like, no, it's the Americans that are wrong. Like, maybe like the American football fans love this guy because he is this big party dude. But I thought he was woefully unlikable. And I do not want. I'm glad he's on the show you review that I don't have to watch a lot.
Thanks, Luke. Really appreciate it.
I'm going to be able to skip his segments in recaps.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm not a fan of Gronk hosting, and I get that he's like a big figure in American pop culture and sport and things like that. And I think probably people like him more. I'm assuming here. I think people had like him. Probably more because he had to retire early. He retired last year, I believe, in March, and he was like 29 when he retired or something like that, like super young. So maybe he can get away with this sort of behavior because everyone's like, oh, it's fine. It's Gronk. We like him. But yeah, we don't. When we've not been exposed to his whole career, we don't. So yeah, it's very American though. But anyway, yeah, as you said, Baron Corbin came out, interrupted and just be like, hey, you're new here. You need to bow down to the king, etc. Which is very similar to Charlotte's gimmick. And Triple H's, yeah. And then Elias comes out, who's been pestering Corbin for the last couple of weeks. He comes out and he says, you know, I've been doing this song, trying to do this song for you for the last couple of weeks. And it's just a song about how Gronk is amazing and Corbin is bad, etc. And Gronk and Mojo are laughing it up and being, like you said, unlikable douchebags in the ring while Elias is playing this song, and Corbin goes, oh, you think that's funny? I don't like you. And he takes off his coat and his crown and stuff. And then Elias gets in and just throws him out the ring, and that's that. And then they start. Well,
before that, Mojo gets down onto all fours. And so
Gronk, oh, God, I forgot about that.
Like they're 8 years old. It, which really, again, does not endear them to me. Maybe it's just me, but I was not a fan of this segment. I was not a fan of these people. Like I hated the hype Mojo Rawley character in NXT. I hated that character, and I hated the hype bros. And now the hype bros are back, but instead of Zack Ryder, it's the Gronk. Who at least I liked Zack Ryder, and I just felt bad for him being saddled with this hype nonsense. But yeah, it's the dark-sided hype bros.
Totally.
it's the worst version of them. We've now got two of them.
Hype bros on the dark timeline. yeah, so they push over Corbin. Elias gets in, throws Corbin out the ring, and just goes, and Gronk says, you two should have a match at WrestleMania. Go, okay. So now it's Corbin versus Elias at Mania.
Yeah, which really does feel like the show of shows. Yeah, Gronk says, I can't make matches for WrestleMania, and then essentially made a match for WrestleMania.
Okay, so this is spoilers for a future segment. Gronk makes a match here. Paige makes a match later, or speaks to someone at Fox who also doesn't have authority to make matches.
Yes, yeah, so I think what she said was, I can't make, well, I know that she said I can't make matches, but she said I asked if I could announce this match. So clearly there is some authority figure that has made the match, and she asked if she could announce it, which I feel works more than just like, I can't make a match, but you two are having a match.
Yeah, we'll get to that Page segment earlier because I did not understand what was going on with that. But yes, Elias versus Corbin confirmed for WrestleMania. Great. Can't wait to watch it.
It's got pre-show written all over it.
Up next, though, was
great.
The tag team I did not know I needed until now is Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak. Good God, this feud has been so good from start to finish. It's been a great story with Daniel Bryan having holes in his game and Drew Gulak coaching other people into trying to expose these flaws in Daniel Bryan's game. And then they had their match at Elimination Chamber and Drew Gulak did really well. And Bryan was like, oh God, I do have holes in my game. You're right. And then he approached him last week on SmackDown, which we've got a video recap of as well, of him saying, hey, man, you were right. I do have holes in my game. Do you still want to teach? Because I'm willing to listen now. And now Sami Zayn's got involved and said, why are you taking tips from him and not me? I'm the Intercontinental Champion. I'm great, which is great for Sami Zayn as a character. It's great for Drew Gulak getting tons of exposure and looking like a really good wrestling mind. And it's good for Daniel Bryan, who as a babyface can accept, hey, I'm not as great as I thought I was. Please coach me on the things that I need. These two came out this week. Last week, they came out and there was a little bit of goofiness when they came out and they were like, oh, I don't want to do the yes chant. There's no fans. And then Gulak was like, you should do the yes chant. And they were like, okay, yes, yes, yes. That's cool. Little bit of goofiness. This week, that got ramped up to 11. And I love it. And I'm here for it. They both come out as likable. Rather than what Gronk and Mojo were doing, which was unlikable, these are two goofs goofing around, but being good doing it and being likable while doing it. They come out doing yes, yes, yes to the crowd, and they go nuts. But as it cuts into an ad break, Brian's on the turnbuckle, Gulak's on the apron, just doing yes insistently. And it was fun. It's fun to watch, and I really like seeing these two together. They have such great chemistry, and they work so well together. I love this tag team.
The exact same note, dude. I've written, oh, this is a fun team. Like, they are really, really good together. And then you had Sam and... So they were taking on Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. So you had Sami Zayn on commentary with Cole. And Sammy was brilliant throughout this, you know, really putting over Cesaro and Nakamura being like, how stupid Bryan and Gulak are. And I've written here, this feels like an actual match coming out of the ad break. Like, this wasn't like we saw the evidence of it last week where the women's tag match they did with Alexa and Cross versus Bayley and Banks, where as soon as they went to ad break, they just stopped wrestling.
Yeah.
The international broadcast showed that they literally just stopped wrestling and then just went back to it 5 seconds before they went back on air. This felt like, you know, and I don't want to make the comparison, but like AEW, Dynamite on Wednesday, where it's just like, do you know what? Let's just go out and have a match. No, if it goes to ad break, just carry on. And we'll just treat this like it's the same match we would have done with fans here. Mm-hmm. And it was so much better because of it. It was really, really good. Cesaro, man, is so, so great. When Gulak gets the hot tag and runs wild and Cesaro gives him that pop-up uppercut, oh, man, it was amazing. Really shuts him down. Then Bryan gets the tag and him and Gulak work together to roll Cesaro up for the win. It was so good. And you had Sami Zayn freaking out on commentary saying that the ref made a bad call. He wasn't actually tagged in. I thought this was awesome. Really, really, really enjoyed this.
It's a brilliant segment. Really enjoyed the match. Really enjoyed Sami on commentary. I had a moment like halfway through the match and I was like, oh my God, there's so much talent in this ring.
Yeah.
With Cesaro, Nakamura, Bryan, and Gulak. I was like, oh my God, this is like someone's fever dream match that we're just getting on SmackDown.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I said last week that Cesaro and Bryan was like amazing because how could you have a bad match with Cesaro and Bryan working together? Same for this match. How could you have a bad match when it's these four people wrestling in the ring? It was amazing. And like you said, the working together to roll up Cesaro, and it felt like the way the roll up happened as well. It felt like it was like them being really good wrestlers and technical maneuvers rather than like, oh, fluke victory. But Sami Zayn was putting that over on commentary. He was like, oh, why has he got the arm? Why has he got the arm? What's he doing? What's he doing? And he rolled in and did like this like sunset roll up essentially. And then got the win off it. It didn't feel cheap and undeserved like a lot of roll up victories can. But it plays into the story of last week as well, because Bryan got the roll-up victory on Cesaro there too. And then we had a backstage segment afterwards where Sami has a sort of legitimate justification of being like, you fluked a win because it was a roll-up. It's I don't know how they've managed to do it. Somehow it's a cheap victory and not a cheap victory at the same time. And it's great. I love this.
Yeah, Sammy said it was a mediocre win, you know, and it's Brian challenged Zayn to an IC championship match at Mania, and Zayn said, well, if Gulak can somehow beat Shinsuke Nakamura next week, then we'll have that match at WrestleMania. Mm. Now, do you know what's interesting about this? So back at Elimination Chamber, where me and Laurie did the live stream, I posed the question, is this Brian elevating Gulak? Or, you know, or is it really just demoting Daniel Bryan? Through no fault of his own, it's just the way that Gulak has been presented. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, then he was in the ring with, like, Heath Slater and, you know, all these sorts of jobbers and stuff. But it actually has turned into Bryan getting Gulak over. Gulak now feels like he's at Bryan's level, and the two work so well together as a tag team. And during the show, I was saying, oh, you know, this Zayn win over Braun Strowman makes so much sense. Like, it's really, really good, because now you're going to get Sammy versus Braun at WrestleMania, where Braun can finally get his hands on Sammy. And I actually had a lot of people say, like, no, it's going to be Sammy versus Bryan at WrestleMania. And I was like, what? That literally makes no sense. They're not connected. But here we are. Like, you know, I was totally wrong on that. I don't know why they dropped the Braun thing. Like, I don't know. Like, it feels very weird that that's not been continued. But you know what? I don't mind, because we're going to get Sami Zayn versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, and that's a big old thumbs up from me. And I love this tag team, and I like that the tandem of Cesaro, Shinsuke, and Sami. So
yeah,
it's a big old thumbs up from me. I loved it.
Exactly. I thought at one point in this backstage segment as well, Sami Zayn was going to say, if you believe in Gulak so much, I'll have the Intercontinental Championship match against Gulak. And when he said against Bryan, I was like, oh, it's not Gulak. And then I was like, wait, it's Sami Zayn versus Daniel Bryan. That's amazing. Yeah. It was like let down, surprise, excitement straight afterwards as well. Yeah, I don't see how you can have any sort of bad matches or feuds coming out of these five people interacting, because they're all amazing and I love them. Mm-hmm. I thought this great segment, Gulak's a great babyface, been elevated so much, really excited for any sort of matches that come out of this, excited for Gulak and Nakamura next week, excited for Bryan and Zayn probably at WrestleMania. I'm well on board. Something I'm less on board with, though, is Paige being there via satellite. Because she was supposed to appear last week to confront Bayley, and then they just said she said travel issues. And that was it. And then this week they said, Paige is going to be here, guys. It's great. It's like the third or fourth time now they've really advertised someone is going to be on the show, and it's just been via satellite. And I don't like it, because it's not the same thing. And I know there's no fans in attendance, so it's not like the fans have been cheapened by not seeing their favorite person like other times with Hogan and others. Goldberg that was there, but via satellite. I still don't like it when they advertise people to be on the show and it's via satellite. It's not the same thing. Paige comes in to confront Bayley, and she doesn't even get Bayley a word out before Bayley and Banks come out to the ring and just be like, hey, don't worry, we've got it here. And they run down Paige and just be like, oh, if you've got a problem with us, why don't you come and wrestle us? Oh, wait, you can't. Ha, 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 you're injured. Which is pretty mean. Paige calls them bullies. And says like we said earlier, spoken to her friends at Fox and gets to announce the match at WrestleMania. She hasn't made the match, but she gets to announce it. But then it feels like she's making up the match on the fly, which is weird. It was a weird, what's the word I'm looking for? It was a weird interchange of what she said before and what she's doing. The actions don't meet the words. There's a word I'm looking for and I can't find it.
I'm not sure what it is, man. These are strange times. But someone will tell us in the comments, which I'll be very glad of. Because she announces, like, it's going to be Bayley versus Lacey Evans. And Bayley's like, I've already beaten her. And she's like, okay, well, how about we make it Bayley versus Lacey Evans versus Dana Brooke? And Bayley's like, well, why not throw Tamina in there? And
still employed?
It's like, okay, Tamina's in there. And then, you know, we'll also add Naomi. Then Banks gets involved and says, like, you can't do this match. He goes, well, there's actually another person in this match, and it's you. And I really liked this segment because of Bayley and Banks, and the some of the content in there didn't quite work, but I really Bayley and Banks, particularly Sasha Banks. I thought her reaction to being put into the match was great because she was like affronted for Bayley because her friend is being put into this situation. The second she got added into it, it was like, oh, actually, that's a great idea. Because, you know, she looks at the title, she smiles, Bayley walks away all grumpy, and Smash just standing in the ring being like, now's my chance. Now's my chance to win the belt. So I actually thought overall the segment worked. I have no idea what Tamina's done to earn a title shot, but, you know, whatever, I guess.
She hasn't even been on SmackDown. I think that was probably supposed to be Carmella, and I think she's in quarantine with Graves right now or something like that.
Oh, right. Okay.
So she can't. That's what I'd assume. Just because Carmella's been on SmackDown quite a lot, she's been quite a featured person. She was having SmackDown, you know, women's championship matches and things like that. So I'd be surprised if they didn't want to include her in this match. I don't know why they wouldn't just make it a five-way and not have Tamina, but, you know, whatever.
Six-pack challenge.
Yeah, six-pack challenge. They got to get that branding over. But yeah, I agree with you. I didn't think this segment worked until it got to the Bayley Bank stuff. And then I really enjoyed it from there. And something that I completely missed a couple of weeks ago on SmackDown that, you know, commenters told me and Datsun told me was that in a backstage segment with Banks and Bayley, Bayley was just saying, we're great. We're awesome. We've beaten everyone. We're the best. Let's go do this thing. And Banks was just looking at the title the whole time. And she said, you know, I'm going to do this for you. And she pointed at the title rather than at Bayley. And it's little things like that. I completely missed it at the time because I was, you know, oblivious, apparently. But this has been teased for quite some time. And it's like, it's a little breakup of the act. It's some dissension potentially between them. I don't know if I want to see a Bayley Banks feud again, but I'm excited to see the interplay between them at WrestleMania as it is. So,
yeah. Positives. I'm kind of on board for it a little bit because, you know, their match they had at TakeOver Brooklyn 1 was like, it's one of the greatest matches in WWE history. And the you know, purely for the emotion that was there. And I think doing that with the roles reversed, you know, 5 years later or however many years later, I actually think that would be quite cool. So I'm all in for it, to be honest. I really am. And, you know, the whole the best friend looks at the title longingly is tried and tested, man. And it always works. And I'm glad, you know, I'm really happy for it. And I kind of wish it was just the two of them having a singles match at Mania rather than doing it as a six-pack challenge. But, you know, here's where we are. And, you know, it's fine because it kind of extends out the storyline. Maybe you can build it through to SummerSlam.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm all for that.
Yeah. I am on board at the end of the day. So that's what it was for. We then got a recap of Cena and The Fiend making their match for WrestleMania. And then they showed Cena versus Bray Wyatt from WrestleMania 30 in full, featuring AEW star Brody Lee, which I thought was quite convenient timing just after he made his Dynamite debut. I didn't watch this because I've already seen it. But you know,
for a second, then I thought you said you hadn't seen it before, and I was like, "No, we're going to release this actually." So Ollie and I, for the Patreon podcast, reviewed WrestleMania 30 last year. I think we did it. So we're going to release that on Monday. We're like every Monday for the time being, we're going to be releasing isolation bonuses, which are sort of podcasts from the 3-odd years we've been doing the WrestleTalk Extra podcast, reviewing old pay-per-views. So yeah, so we're going to release that on Monday. I thought it was quite timely given this match. So yeah, if you want to hear Ollie and I talk about that in depth and talk about how bad it was for Wyatt's career following, check that out. Subscribe to the WrestleTalk podcast. What is funny though is that, you know, essentially they're asking us to rewatch this match, but they're now pretending that it was a good thing that Cena beat him at Mania because it's Cena beating him at Mania created the Fiend. Like they have rewritten the storyline. As fans, we know that's not the case. We know that's complete balderdash. But in the sort of kayfabe world, I don't mind it. You know, I don't mind that they're kind of using it as a way to explain why we're having this match again. So I honestly don't mind that too much. And I just wish it was for the title. I just wish Fiend was still the champion and it was Cena going for his 17th world title. And it's, you know, the Fiend trying to get his redemption. Without it, it doesn't feel quite as heated, but I am still kind of in for it. I'm really curious to see the match also because I do think Cena's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible,
I'm not betting
man.
On the Fiend. I'm not betting on the Fiend anymore. I've been burnt too many times. I'm not betting on the bloody Fiend anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a great choice to show this match because it does have that context of, especially with the Fiend's promo last week or the week before, whenever it was, when he was saying that literally this match was the start of the downward spiral of Bray Wyatt, which is actually true. It was that loss at WrestleMania that started the descent of Bray Wyatt, and when everyone started going, oh, he talks a lot and never wins. And it all started with that loss from Cena, because that I don't think people realize it at the time. I think you guys mentioned it in your WrestleMania 30 review that you can listen to on the WrestleTalk podcast from Monday, that one, that you mentioned that, like, the build to that match was perfect. It was such a brilliant feud, and it was just the wrong person won.
Yeah.
But simply because of that fact, that the wrong person won, that began the descent of Bray Wyatt. And that's when he started becoming this character that was too rambly and talked and never won. And this whole thing that led in, that kind of indirectly created the Fiend. That was he's back referencing all this stuff from that downward spiral that started with the Cena win at Mania. So I think it's a half truth, I think, that they're trying to tell us. It's not like he won, therefore Fiend. It was like he won, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this. This was the starting point of the downward spiral of Bray Wyatt.
Wyatt has taken a bad booking decision and turned it into a storyline.
Correct.
And you know what? And I'm all for that. And I think that is actually a pretty smart thing to do. I think those who have got a bit of smarts about them know that it's nonsense. But I, you know, as a fan, I don't mind too much. I actually think it's a smart way to do it. So yeah, I'm really, really curious to see that match. Really am.
It's probably my most anticipated match on the card, I think. Mm.
Yeah.
That and probably McIntyre-Lesnar. But I think McIntyre-Lesnar is more just fear that McIntyre won't win.
I think he's winning.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought The Fiend was winning, but now you've said Cena, so, you know. Mm. Weird thing for this one. Miz and Morrison come out.
Before we had Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross backstage.
I was getting there. Weird pacing of this. Miz and Morrison come out. They got to an ad break. My guess at this time, Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. I was like, Miz and Morrison are waiting in the ring. What are you doing? Weird pacing. Didn't get it. But yes, backstage promo with Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss saying that Alexa was saying Asuka came out and cost me the match last week. They showed a video recap of it. Alexa saying, you cost me a match last week. You've been skirting in the shadows and all that stuff. Alexa versus Asuka next week on SmackDown, and you can come through the front door this time. Mm. I'm actually quite looking forward to that match. I think it'll be really fun.
Brand split, LOL. Yeah.
I think it's LOL.
Yeah. We'll likely get that sort of tag match at Mania rather than the triple threat tag match that was originally planned with the Divas of Doom. I think we're just going to just ignore that element of it and just focus on this, which I think is actually the right thing to do.
Agreed. Yeah. I think brand split LOL doesn't quite apply for the women's tag titles just because they do float between brands anyway, supposedly.
Yeah. I was going to say supposedly because they haven't for the past year or so.
Yeah, no. I mean, they haven't really been looked at for the past year or so. So, you know.
True, yeah.
But yes, Alexa versus Asuka this week. I'm looking forward to it. Then we got this whole thing from start to finish was definitely my favorite thing on the show because we got a dirt sheet with Miz and Morrison, where they came out and did the full dirt sheet intro, two men have risen above, etc. I thought Morrison was hilarious, just generally because I always loved, especially from the dirt sheet back in the day, which I've watched retroactively because I wasn't watching wrestling at the time when it first aired. I went back and watched like every dirt sheet episode because I thought it was great. There was a great line from Morrison at the start when he just goes, hi, I'm John Morrison, and this week I've learned to whip and nay-nay, which I thought was just, it's just a funny line. I love Morrison so much. I think he's great. They talk about how they don't have any challenges for the tag team championships at WrestleMania because they've already beaten everyone. They won an Elimination Chamber, which is a legitimate claim. And it cuts to, obviously, there's no one in the crowd. So, like, who should be our challengers? Speak up now, etc. And it cuts to themselves dressed up in the crowd as a unicorn and, I guess, Big E with a horn on, sure. And they cut a New Day-style promo on themselves. And then it cuts back to them. And then it's the Usos that are there. And they cut, except it's not the Usos, it's Miz and Morrison again, dressed up as the Usos, and Morrison cutting an Uso-style promo with Miz just going, yeah, oh, in the background, I thought was great. And then it cuts to themselves again, dressed up as Bacon, and they cut a Heavy Machinery style promo. I thought this was hilarious. And then, yeah, it cuts back to them in the ring being like, huh, that was weird. I didn't know there were going to be fans here tonight. Those really good looking fans. I thought there were so many funny lines in this, and the impressions of them doing the promos I thought was spot on. I thought this was hilarious. I loved it.
You liked it more than I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was, I'm not a fan of Miz and Morrison. It's just not my comedy. I thought them dressing up as Bacon was funny. But what I did like about this segment was using the fact that it is a no fans thing to mess with the format a little bit. Like them not having to, you know, conform to live television rules meant they could have things where they're dressed up as New Day and dressed up as Usos and dressed up as Heavy Machinery. That I actually thought was really fun, really inventive, and I really liked. I didn't laugh, but you know, that's just personal preference. Yeah. But I thought the segment itself was actually quite clever.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like you said, it was very clever. I liked it. I thought it was very funny. And it led to a match between Miz and Morrison and Heavy Machinery, who came out. And they were saying, you know, if Heavy Machinery win here, could be in with a shot at WrestleMania, tag title match at WrestleMania, that would be really cool. They came out for a match. I really enjoyed the match itself as well. I thought it was great. It was really fun. Just as Otis is about to get the hot tag, Dolph Ziggler comes out. And Otis is like, not Dolph Ziggler. Gets distracted for a bit, misses the hot tag, cuts him an ad break. Ziggler's on commentary. And as they come back, they're starting to get into it again. And just as Otis is setting up for a double caterpillar, Ziggler hops up from commentary and says, hey, man, I want to show you some photos of me and Mandy. LOL, I'm great, you're not, etc. And Otis is just looking at the pictures and kind of lost in thought for a little bit. And then he just goes ballistic. And we've never seen this side of Otis before. And I am so here for it. He destroys Miz and Morrison. And the whole time I was like, oh, he's getting distracted. He's going to lose the match because of the photos on the screen. Sure, whatever. We've seen it. Distraction, Otis loses. But as soon as he got like rolled into the ring, he immediately double clotheslines Miz and Morrison out the ring. He throws him into the ring post, throws him into the table, grabs one of them and is screaming in his face. And he goes to get a chair. And Tucker's like, dude, no, don't hit him with a chair. You're going to lose the match. And he's like, too late. Bonk. And just starts destroying him with a chair. I was like, this is amazing. I love this side of Otis. And I love the story. And I just want Otis to murder Ziggler. I'm so into this story. I'm so into this feud. I loved it. I thought this was a brilliant segment.
This match, this story, this segment was perfect. Absolutely perfect. It was so, oh man, just perfectly timed and just perfectly written, perfectly executed. There was nothing, they did not put a foot wrong here. Miz and Morrison were great heels during the match. Ziggler coming out was a brilliant heel on commentary. Him getting up and distracting Otis with the pictures of Mandy was a brilliantly perfect dick heel move. Otis is acting in the ring where he just starts crying because, you know, he's heartbroken, and then there's that freak out. And as you say, like, you could have led to like, oh, he gets distracted by Ziggler, that leads to him getting lost. No, it makes him fire up even more when he wiped out Miz and Morrison through the barricade. It was brilliant. And shout out to Tucker as well. Tucker just gets it, and he's trying to like calm him down. He's like, dude, we need to focus on this. We need to not. And then Otis just hits him with a chair. Tucker's like, oh man, like, you know, we've lost the match. And they put it over on commentary. It's like Dolph Ziggler's actions and Otis's reaction have cost them a shot at the titles at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So that's also a perfect element to this. And then it closes with Otis crying and his best friend Tucker just hugging him, being like, it's okay, man. It's okay.
Oh,
I
God.
I thought this was a home run segment. I freaking loved everything about this. I loved Otis' storyline. I think Heavy Machinery are so great in this. I think Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode, I mean, Bobby's not here at the moment because he's stuck in Canada, but Dolph's great in this. And actually, so the original plan, according to WrestleVotes, was the six-man tag. They were going to have Heavy Machinery and Mandy versus Dolph Ziggler and Sonya Deville.
Dolph and Ziggler.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a workhorse, man. He'll he'll pull double duty if need be. Dolph Roode and Sonya Deville. But I actually really hope it's a singles match. Mm-hmm. I really hope it's just Dolph versus Otis, because I think that will be one of the most heated matches at Mania from in my eyes, because I want to see Otis get his revenge. I want to see his redemption. I want to see him get just beat that little dick up, because Ziggler, like, once Ziggler's done all of his distraction stuff and Otis is freaking out on Miz and Morrison, Dolph's bailed. Dolph's bailed up the ramp and he's just watching on, and his reaction upstage is like, I've unleashed something. I thought this was, I cannot praise the segment enough. I thought it was
it's brilliant.
Perfect. Brilliant stuff.
Everyone's characters is spot on. And it's not just like, oh, I feel bad for Otis. It's like, I feel bad for Tucker as well.
Yeah, like, right?
Dude, we just got to get this tag title match. That's all he wants. But then he's not being a dick about it when Otis loses his cool and starts beating up Miz and Morrison and costs them the match and costs them, you know, a DQ loss. Tucker's like, you know what? I understand. I'm like, Tucker, I love you as well. Like, oh, God.
It
works on so many different levels. Everyone's characters in the story is perfect. Like you said, home run segment, perfect. Can't praise it enough. It's awesome. Love it.
Awesome stuff. Absolutely awesome.
And there was one bit, I think it was Miz and Morrison in the match. I just want to give a shout out to this line where they're impersonating. I think it's Otis is on the apron. And he goes, oh, Ducky, and starts impersonating him. And he goes, and then one of them just shouts out, I can't remember who it was, just goes, he's feeling yucky. And I was like, you know what? I'll give you that. It's great. I love them. They're lovable goofballs. We see that next week it's going to be New Day versus Usos, with the winners facing Miz and Morrison at Mania, which is cool. I don't know whether they're going to do some sort of shenanigans to make that a triple threat or involve someone else at some point. I don't know.
I think Miz and Morrison will cost it, because like Miz and Morrison effectively said like they should take the night off on Mania, so I think they'll do that, and then it'll get turned into a triple threat.
Triple threat, totally. And then we got the final segment, which was the contract signing that we've spoken about, of the WWE Universe never saw this match coming in a million years. Totally. And that was the show. Overall, I thought this was a really good empty arena show. Like we said before, the best one they've done so far. As a WrestleMania building show, I thought it was fine. There's some good stuff in there. I bloody love the Miz and Morrison, Otis, Dolph whole tag team division shakeup feuds. Great. Loved it. There was some stuff that I'm looking forward to. The Sasha Banks Bayley stuff I thought was good build. It was solid. I just wish it was more, you know, WrestleMania caliber feuds rather than feuds. But that said, still really enjoyed the show. Ending was a bit pants. Opening was a bit pants, which really impacts a show. The way it opens and closes are really like impactful segments. And I thought open and close weren't great. I'd probably give this a high 3 out of 5, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if we are scoring these sort of shows because they are hard to score. Definitely would have given this like high 3 out of 5, if only just for that, like Otis. So the Otis freak out and all the stuff with Dolph and Tucker and Miz and Morrison. Yeah, I thought it was a really, really, really fun show. And it is the best of the empty arena shows they've done so far. I think they might. I'm hoping that Raw follows suit. I really hope that Raw follows suit. Because if it does, I think they've figured it out. I think they've finally solved the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to more shows, which is not something I say about WWE all too often. So, you know, thumbs up. So, Luke, yesterday, peeling behind the curtain, I believe Adam already tweeted about it anyway. As an office, we played a game, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Dobbins and Bobbins.
That's there the one.
And I attempted to replicate that game when I met up with my friends last night as well, which I told them the name, and immediately the name became something else. It was Dobbins and Bobbins. Oh, it's Squiggles and Wiggles. It's something that rhymes. Two words that rhyme, we'll just put them together. And that became the name of the game. But it was hilarious, and it was great, and everyone had fun. So it actually worked. It was awesome. So you have to name ridiculous horse names, because horse names are inherently ridiculous, and you have to make up some fake names of horses and try and guess the real ones out of everyone's fake ones. There were some brilliant names. I think probably the favorite one from when we played it on the call was Grass Consumption Device or Grass Consumption Machine or something like that.
Yeah, that's the one.
A brilliant name for our editor Rich. What a game. What a great game Adam introduced us to.
It was really fun, and I smashed it. Absolutely knocked it out the park.
You did. It was unfortunate. I think I came last. I had 2 points.
Yeah.
And I think I should have won.
Yeah, I won with 14 points in the end. And I was talking to my wife about this. I think I sort of doubly won because Adam came second as the games master. Mm. And Adam got points if we didn't guess what the real horse was. So really, he was effectively cheating points. He was getting points for us being bad, and whereas I was just getting points for being good. So I do think that I doubly won the game because I had 14 points, he had 13, and I think the second closest to me was 6.
I'm just
putting it out there. I totally smashed it, mate. Absolutely. Yeah. Totally. Smashed it with my deep cut references. Everyone thought that Minya was a horse name when it is in fact the son of Godzilla, because when written down it looks like Manila and does sound like a horse name.
Absolutely, yeah.
I
was really proud of my horse names, and yeah. No one picked them. It was so unfortunate. Everyone did so well with coming up with fake horse names that I couldn't even match it. It was so
apart from Ollie, who at one point wrote Alf Ramsey's sex dungeon.
Alf Ramsey's porn dungeon, I believe
sorry.
It was.
My yeah. apologies.
It was brilliant, yeah. In fact, he did his suggestions to Adam, and Adam said, no, these are too sexual. Do some more. Which I think is very Ollie. We had some fantastic suggestions, both in the work game and among my friends as well. I can't think of any off the top of my head now that I think about it, though. But they were great. You just have to take my word for it. They were great. And so I think one of my favorites, though, is one that Michelle suggested to me, which I used in the work game, which was Cindy with an S. And
I loved that.
And the first Cindy is spelled C-I-N-D-Y, and the full name is Cindy with an S. Oh, it's a brilliant name. It was very good. Very proud of her for that.
Yeah, very good.
But
have you found the working from home situation?
I mean, I'm not a fan. I'd rather be in the office. I'm really just trying to regiment my day properly and make sure I do things like, you know, I'm working in a different room than where I sleep. I have to make sure I get up from the desk every so often and walk around the flat, because if I don't, I'm going to drive myself insane. But there's little things like that I'm not normally privy to. Like during the week, we've got construction work that's happening like pretty much immediately outside my flat. It goes, here's the flat, here's a little bit of ground, construction work, like really, really close by, which they work from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. So normally I don't really ever hear them, and it's only Monday to Friday. So I don't really hear them bar Mondays, but trying to work with the construction work near me is really frustrating, especially when it gets hot in here and I need to open up the balcony to get some fresh air in. It's like, oh, even louder. Great. So it's taken some getting used to work from home. And I don't like the fact that I'm not around you guys in the office. And we don't get to chat about things, but, you know, needs must.
Needs must indeed. It'll be like this for the next few weeks. At least, absolutely.
Have you found it?
I've been okay. I mean, I'm pretty good at being self-disciplined when I'm at work. I'm working from home, you know. I will get up, I will have breakfast, and I will have a shower, and I'll get dressed, and I will, you know, do work in regular clothes as opposed to just sort of sitting around in my pajamas all day. I was talking about this on yesterday's podcast, but me and my wife are going to get into a regiment now where we're going to get up and we're going to do some yoga in the morning and have breakfast together. And then I'll get in and I'll start doing my work. But I'm kind of in a very fortunate position that, you know, we've got a 2-bed flat. So my office really is an office. I've got my setup here. I've got my laptop. I've got the Mac, and I've got my second screen and my microphone and everything. And when I just need to walk away from it, I can just shut the door and I can just leave it. I can just walk away from everything. So, me and my wife can sit down. We can have lunch together in the living room. And that's fine, because I don't then have like my laptop near me, teasing me with work possibilities.
Yeah.
I'm able to walk away for it for a good hour. So that's good. But yeah, yeah. I need to get up and just be a bit more active and things, so I'm not just sitting here all day. And yeah. I'm glad that we're doing Ollie's quote enforced fun, which is where we are playing the games over Google Hangouts.
Yeah, which I think is great for morale and also to keep us as an office. Because I think there could be a chance, if we didn't do that, that we'd kind of just be like, oh, we're just some guys that work together rather than, you know, friends who work together.
Totally.
Which I think is much better, yeah. Yeah, I'm just very excited for this to all blow over so we can go back to working in the office, because I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah, it gets really hot in my flat as well. Like, just generally. Which is a very nice thing during the winter. I don't think we actually ever had to use the heating, which is mental. But yeah, it gets really hot in here. So then we have to open it up all the time, and then there's just all the construction sounds and the noisiness from everyone else that gets in. It's... That's some world problem coming in right now. I don't like it when the world has a pandemic, so I have to hear construction sounds. Okay. Yeah. That's some world problems. It's probably my favorite segment I've ever done on a podcast.
It's really good, man.
So funny. Especially when people really get it and they email in their own That's Some World Problems. It's genuine favorite thing. So please send more. I want more That's Some World Problems. Send them in, pete@wrestletalk.com. Pretty
we
please.
Need them now more than ever.
Absolutely, yeah. It's fun to poke fun at the trivial stuff. Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say because I'm very hungover.
I was going to say, I mean, I've still got to get images for Ollie's SmackDown review, and I've got to edit out this podcast. So, yeah, we may have to go, man.
Yeah. So that's all the time we've got for this episode of the SmackDown Wrestle Talk podcast. We'll be back. Well, we've got the extra podcast coming out, the Wrestle Talk extra podcast that's going to be a regular podcast coming out on Monday. If you guys want to hear WrestleMania 30, Ollie and Luke deep dive into that. Because we're going to be releasing them into the podcast feed as special bonus things, which we spoke about in the main review. Yeah, and then we'll be back on Tuesday with Raw and probably AEW, but not NXT, probably, because it might just be more video packages and stuff. We don't know. Yeah, we're going to keep as much of a regular schedule as we can, plus extra bonus content, etc. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. I love you all. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.